From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
For the week of March 13, 2006, it is the Disc Golf News. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks for joining us. And coming up in the show this week, the 2006 PDGA Spring Summit meetings were held recently in Arizona. Communications Director Terry Calhoun is going to join us, tell us what happened, what was discussed, what was decided. He's got some exciting news about the membership growth and some decisions were made where to send the Pro-Am and Junior Worlds over the next couple of years. We'll be talking with him later in the show. Are your approaches from 150 feet coming up a little short, maybe not shaving any strokes for you? Then you need to pay attention to what Brian Schweberger has to say in this week's 60-second clinic. And we've got a preview of the upcoming Melbourne Open National Tour event in sunny Florida. That and more is on the way on this edition of PDGA Radio News, brought to you by Innova Champion Disc at InnovaDisc.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drives no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion Line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with a new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
Time now for the 60-second clinic. Our friend Brian Schweberger is back, and the topic this week is approach shots from 150 feet.
Back in the day, 150 feet and in, I was jump putting all day. Now that I've developed a little bit better approach game, I'd say I'm just trying to throw a lower shot in general. I don't throw putters. I throw mid-range discs and sometimes drivers if the wind is high. Definitely a slight high is a release, so I'm usually throwing low, and I'm usually trying to skip it about 15, 20 feet before the basket. For me, a flat shot can catch a slight bit of wind, and it could air bounce and cruise on by the basket. And the way I think about it, I use the ground as part of the brakes for the disc. And if it doesn't skip, it's fine. It's only a 15, 20-foot putt. And if it skips a little, it's 15 feet past and 15 feet short is the same putt. Yeah, a little bit of hyzer, definitely. I don't like to throw flat, if at all possible. That requires a little bit too much touch for me.
Professional disc golfer Brian Schweberger of North Carolina finished in 10th place last year at Pro Worlds.
Hi, this is Tim McGill, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture, as you know, if you listen to the show or you pay attention to the PDGA schedule, the memorial was held recently in Arizona. And as has become custom, the PDGA Spring Summit meeting was held concurrently. Joining us to talk about what happened at this year's Spring Summit is PDGA Communications Director Terry Calhoun. And among the topics we're going to discuss this week include membership growth, AM, Pro, and Junior Worlds decisions, and a new name for the National Disc Golf Center.
The summit, until very recently, was the one time a year that all of the board members in the PDGA were expected to get together face-to-face. And as the name implies, summit, more than just the board members, we invite lots of people with whom we're engaged in collaborative work or with whom we'd like to engage in collaborative work, and including some vendors that we work with, to get together and basically talk about and inform the board of directors during its meeting about the various decisions facing it. Anywhere from 20 to 40 people show up over the course of a couple of days, and it's a very informal, very, very informal kind of meeting. We run a regular board meeting, but when anyone on the floor, anyone in the room, even if we don't even know who the person is, can talk up and in the discussions, and when we have a discussion after a motion and a second, before the board members actually vote on something, the rest of the audience in the room is often polled as well. So sometimes they get some top pros showing up. Other times we get people with various issues they want to have addressed. And I think this time around there was at least someone who had a list of issues that someone else wanted them to raise, and we gave them 10 minutes, I think, at the podium to read off these issues and give us things to think about. So it's a very open face-to-face meeting of disc golf leadership, movers and shakers, whatever. And it's usually, since I've been involved with disc golf and the PDGA, it takes place in Arizona in conjunction with the Memorial, which is the big first opening event of the season and the opener of the national tour.
The PDGA board has regular meetings via teleconference, and two times a year now they get together for this face-to-face summit. And I know a lot more tends to get done at the summit as far as final decisions on big projects and other big decisions. So let's delve into some of those big decisions that were made. And I always like to start off with good news. So what good news do you have for us to report from the summit?
There was just so much stuff that I thought was good. It's hard to say where to start. I think the good news at the moment is, with a couple of contingencies, we're set on where the world championships are going to be for 2007 and 2008, which one of our goals has been to move that out and have that take place earlier. This year, the Worlds will be in Tulsa for the Ams and in Augusta for the Pros. Next year, in 2007, the Worlds have already been granted to Wisconsin, Terry Miller in Milwaukee for the Ams, and we give contingent approval to High Bridge Hills, which is up on Lake Superior, northern Wisconsin, almost to Canada. And in 2008, again, contingency approval on Kalamazoo, Michigan, for the third combined Pro-Am Worlds in 2008. And the contingent means that both decisions require a PDGA leadership team of staff and some volunteers to visit, look at the local amenities, look at the routes between courses, look at the courses themselves, and gauge what shape they're in and the caliber they are and how willing the parks are to bring them up to a higher caliber and that kind of thing. But things look pretty set for 2 years out, which is nice. It's better that way than scrambling year to year. And I fully expect, and I know from what reading the news media, that there's at least one town somewhere out there where the town council just voted in the last month to support the local disc golf club in bidding for the 2009 Worlds. So we're really moving it out there.
And real briefly, Terry, because I know there's a lot of things we need to cover in this interview, but what is the general health of proposals coming in to host Worlds? I think back to 2002 when we had to scramble and Houston stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we'll host Pro Worlds in 2002 because no one else had stepped up. So what is the general health of that situation?
It could be better, but I think in the past it's been worse. Like I said, we're out 2 years for sure now, and we have people we know looking at 3 years out from now. And that hasn't been the case since I've been on the board for 5 years. What the real dilemma is, to be perfectly frank, Pro Worlds, because Pro Worlds for the tournament director in the local club can result in a lot of positive things, like new courses in the ground and spiffing up and publicity and that kind of stuff. But it doesn't. It's tougher to do a Pro Worlds and finish with any money in your pocket. That's a lot easier to do an Am Worlds that way. And so there's a little more difficulty getting people to bid on Pro Worlds. I also heard something about some kind of international proposal for Pro Worlds, perhaps in Canada for 2009, is being worked on as well. So we'd like to have three or four competing proposals like the Olympics and go through that kind of process every year. But as you're right, one of the things about the summit is we make big decisions. And because a lot of things we work on all year long come to a head then, and we know we'll have an audience where we'll get lots of advice. That's the situation at Worlds now. So I'd say healthy, yes, but the Pro Worlds needs attention. And we're hoping that the work that we're doing with Dr. John Dussler now, heading up a marketing committee to obtain large corporate sponsorship, or at least large relative to disc golf, can work in the favor of making Pro Worlds be the kind of event more people want to manage locally.
On to more good news. There are good numbers coming in on the membership side of the PDGA. What's happening there?
Again, my notes are at home, but I'm almost a senior grandmaster, so exact details will be hard to come by. But I did some charts on those just for fun, and they are all like, you know, nice straight line upward curving growth. I forget the exact statistics for last year, but I think we had 9,500 members as the goal, and we were in the 9,600s last year. So we're pretty confident we'll get over 10,000 active dues-paying members in 2006. Last weekend, Saturday, Lori Gibson, the membership manager at the PGA, who'd been working in the office on Saturday afternoon, as they often do, called me at home because she just wanted to share the exciting news with somebody. She said that they had just finished the last batch of renewals that had come in, and the PGA office staff has, had by Saturday, March 11th of 2006, has already processed more memberships than in all of the year 2000. So we were definitely seeing nice, good growth in membership numbers and in sanctioned events. And of course, and the real important statistic, which is number of courses in the ground.
Now, I don't know what that news, if I should continue to hound people here on the radio show to renew their memberships early, or if I should leave them alone until next year.
Nah, hound them. Hound them. I'm really encouraged even locally. This is not the summit, but just talking with local people here in Ann Arbor, I know within the last 3 months I've had half a dozen guys tell me that they were going to renew this year. They hadn't renewed recently, but they were going to renew now. There's kind of an impetus to be part of this, of the growth that's going on. And so do bug them. We have, in addition, we have this membership email newsletter that during the season we send out weekly to members, and the people who expired are no longer getting that. They're no longer going to get Disc Golf World News. They no longer can post on the discussion board. And those are for members. And but in addition to that, we've got about 10,000, maybe 11,000 names on an email list now that we send a monthly newsletter to the PDJ from. And all the members who expired are on that now, so they'll hear from us month to month by email saying, look, don't you wish you had joined again by now, and you keep poking at them with the radio show, and that'll be cool.
The National Disc Golf Center in Columbia County, Georgia has a new name. What is the name, and why the change?
Well, it's the International Disc Golf Center, and the name changes because from the very beginning of it, even though National Disc Golf Center struck a chord in people, there were lots of folks who thought, why? You know, the PDJ does not consider itself even North American, much less a United States organization. Why is that not called the International Disc Golf Center? So really, it was the first time it was brought up to the board and proposed, and no one had a problem with it, including Pete May, the board member from Augusta, who is probably the brains behind the whole thing happening in the first place. The major reason for that, us paying attention to that now, was because of the growth we've had in international disc golf through the PDGA. We've got the European Open as a major event this year in Finland. We've got the Japan Open as a major event in Japan. There are several other sanctioned events in other countries. And in fact, in the last year, membership growth has, in 2005, membership growth internationally doubled over 2004. And we're going to do better in 2006 too. We now have a half a dozen or more members in France where we had none. We have this year 40 some out of Germany where we had only six or seven. Stork, Dan Roddick, that is, and Brian Henniger, the executive director, and Dave Nesmith, the former board member, are all three deeply involved in disc sports internationally, and the PDGA is working its way through the various bureaucracies to really connect better with people in other countries. And it's interesting, one of the main drivers is they all want PDGA ratings. They really want to be able to compare themselves to disc golfers elsewhere around the world, and to do that they've got to get PDGA events, and they've got to get ratings.
PDGA Communications Director Terry Calhoun spoke to us from his office in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he had so much to tell us about the summit. So many things were accomplished that we're going to have to tell you more in next week's show, so he'll be joining us then. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News. The PDGA National Tour rolls into Florida in a couple of weeks for the Melbourne Open, Friday through Sunday, March 24th through the 26th. The tournament director for this one once again this year is our friend Ron Aldridge.
This is the Melbourne Open's 16th year. We started in 1990, obviously, and we've progressed each year with amazing abilities and cash and sponsorships and such. And the NT, since its conception, we've been there with them, and we as well have been with the USDGC since its conception. And we've been growing and growing, and if you look at the past history of the Melbourne Open, we've been in the top 12 for the past several years. The defending champs, of course, are Barry Schultz in the Open, Nadine Cosgrove in the women's, and Brad Hammack in the Masters. And all three of those are coming again this year as well to play. And we are as well offering seniors and grandmasters this year. The challenges that will come on is mainly going to be the wind. A strong easterly wind usually provides us with a great challenge. Most of the baskets are tucked behind palmetto bushes and such as that. It's pretty well open. It's easy if you're coming down from the mountains where there's a lot of rolling hills. You don't have to deal with upshots going uphill and downhill. It's a player-friendly course. Of course, some of the changes have been made to make it not so friendly because the top players in the world are coming to play. But if they haven't played in the Melbourne Open, like I said, all they've had to see the stats of them for our tournament in the past, and the responses from the players, the payouts, the lunches that we do 15 minutes from the beach. If the best place to be in March is Florida. You know, we're going to have the crane again this year. We've got the crane that's going to have three baskets hanging off of it. 2 years ago, we had one basket. Last year, we had two baskets. This year, we are going to have three. Last year, with the two baskets that we had, we raised over $400 in 2 hours, and that is a dollar a shot. So you do the math of putting how many shots in 2 hours that equal 400, and we had to stop it because we were running out of daylight. It's a pretty amazing sight to see the crane up there with all those baskets. All the money raised goes to our local charity. Last year, we gave it to the Florida Wildlife Foundation, and the year before that, we gave it to the food bank of Brevard County. And this year, we've got two possible. It's a great time, and it's everything's positive down here. Like Greg Hossfeld said, quoted, and he said the Melbourne Open is the feel-good tournament of the year.
Ron Aldridge is tournament director for the upcoming Melbourne Open National Tour event, March 24th through the 26th. The purse for this one last year was over $14,000. It is expected to go up significantly this year. And Ron asked us to remind you that you rock. So come on down. So I went out and played my first PDGA event of the season this past weekend. Yeah, had a DNF. I was so out of shape, couldn't play the second round. I mean, pathetic. Let's hope your weekend is better this upcoming weekend, March 18th and 19th. In Wimberley, Texas, it's the Professional World Doubles Championships. Good luck to everyone there. Orangevale, California, hosting the St. Paddy's Classic for pros. In Atlanta, it's the Pro Secret Squirrel Soiree. Oskaloosa, Iowa, hosting the Disc Nuts OPC Open. In Albuquerque, Duke Fest, Oceanside, it ends the ride. This is California's the Emerald Island Open. That's the EIEIO. Temperance, Michigan, hosting the March Mudder. In Columbus, it's the March Madness event. In High Point, North Carolina, it's Mookie's Cup, not yours. Janesville, Wisconsin, hosting the Wisconsin Tour warm-up. And in Brunswick, Maine, the Beast Championships. Full list anytime, pdga.com. And finally this week, there is a brand new Disc Golf Media Outreach program coming your way. It is Disc Golf Television on the web. It's called Disc Golf TV. The guy behind this is Minnesota's Timmy Gill. He's a longtime pro and a swell guy. And I talked to Timmy recently and said, so, what do you want to come on the show and talk about this? He said, yeah, you know, I'm just getting started. Let me get a couple of weeks under my belt, get the bugs out, and then we'll come and talk about it more. But enough people are talking about it now on the web that, well, I had to mention it too, because it is pretty darn cool if you can get it to work, which for a lot of people you can. So check it out. It's at www.discgolftv.com. And like I said, we will have Timmy Gill on the show very soon to talk more about this exciting new website. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of March 13 for the PDGA. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks to our sponsor this week, Innova Champion Disc. And until next time, I hope you will get out there, huck some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.